Episode 11. Flatland, A Romance of Many Dimensions, by Edwin Abbott Abbott, read by David Grizzly Smith. Part 2. Other Worlds. Section 21. How I tried to teach the theory of the three dimensions to my grandson, and with what success. I awoke rejoicing, and began to reflect on the glorious career before me. I would go forth, methought, at once, and evangelize the whole of Flatland, even to women and soldiers, should the gospel of the three dimensions be proclaimed. I would begin with my wife. Just as I had decided on the plan of my operations, I heard the sound of many voices in the street, commanding silence. Then there followed a louder voice. It was a herald's proclamation. Listening attentively, I recognized the words of the resolution of the council, enjoining the arrest, imprisonment, or execution of anyone who would pervert the minds of the people by delusions, and by professing to have received revelations from another world. I reflected. This danger was not to be trifled with. It would be better to avoid it by omitting all mention of my revelation, and by proceeding on the path of demonstration, which, after all, seemed so simple and so conclusive that nothing would be lost by discarding the former means. Upward, not northward, was the clue to the whole proof. It had seemed to me fairly clear before I fell asleep, and when I first awoke, fresh upon my dream, it had appeared as patent as arithmetic. But somehow it did not seem to me quite so obvious now. Though my wife entered the room opportunely, just at that moment, I decided, after we had interchanged a few words of commonplace conversation, not to begin with her. My pentagonal sons were men of character, standing, and physicians of no mean reputation, but not great in mathematics, and in that respect unfit for my purpose. But it occurred to me that a young and docile hexagon with a mathematical turn would be a most suitable pupil. Why, therefore, not make my first experiment with my little precocious grandson, whose casual remarks on the meaning of 3 to the 3rd had met with the approval of the sphere? While discussing the matter with him, a mere boy, I should be in perfect safety, for he would know nothing of the proclamation of the council, whereas I could not feel sure that my sons, so greatly did their patriotism and reverence for the circles predominate over mere blind affection, might not feel compelled to hand me over to the prefect if they found me seriously maintaining the seditious heresy of the third dimension. But the first thing to be done was to satisfy in some way the curiosity of my wife, who naturally wished to know something of the reasons for which the circle had desired that mysterious interview, and of the means by which he had entered our house. Without entering into the details of the elaborate account I gave her, an account I fear not quite so consistent with truth as my readers in Spaceland might desire, I must be content with saying that I succeeded, at least, in persuading her to return quietly to her household duties without eliciting from me any reference to the world of three dimensions. This done, I immediately sent for my grandson. For, to confess the truth, I felt that all that I had seen and heard was in some strange way slipping away from me, like the image of a half-grasped, tantalizing dream, and I longed to essay my skill in making a first disciple. When my grandson entered the room, I carefully secured the door. Then, sitting down by his side and taking our mathematical tablets, or, as you would call them, lines, I told him we would resume the lesson of yesterday. I taught him once more how a point by motion in one dimension produces a line, how a straight line in two dimensions produces a square, After this, forcing a laugh, I said, "And now, you scamp, you wanted to make me believe that a square, me, in the same way, by motion upward, not northward, produce another figure, a sort of extra square, in three dimensions. Say that again, you young rascal." At this moment, we heard once more the herald's, oh yes, outside in the street, proclaiming the resolution of the council. Young though he was, my grandson, who was unusually intelligent for his age, and bred up in perfect reverence for the authority of the circles, took in the situation with an acuteness for which I was quite unprepared. He remained silent till the last words of the proclamation had died away, and then, bursting into tears,
"Dear Grandpapa," he said, "that was only my fun, and of course I meant nothing at all by it, and we did not know anything then about the new law, and I don't think I said anything about the third dimension, and I am sure I did not say one word about upward, not northward, for that would be such nonsense, you know. How could a thing move upward and not northward? Upward and not northward? Even if I were a baby, I would not be so absurd as that. How silly it is."
"Not at all silly," I said, losing my temper. "Here, for example, take this square," and at the word I grasped a movable square, which was lying at hand, "and I move it. You see, not northward, but, yes, I move it upward. That is to say, not northward, but I move it somewhere, not exactly like this, but somehow..." Here I brought my sentence to an inane conclusion, shaking the square about in a purposeless manner, much to the amusement of my grandson, who burst out laughing louder than ever, and declared that I was not teaching him, but joking with him, and so saying, he unlocked the door and ran out of the room. And thus ended my first attempt to convert a pupil to the gospel of three dimensions. Section 22. How I then tried to diffuse the theory of three dimensions by other means, and of the result. My failure with my grandson did not encourage me to communicate my secret to others of my household, yet neither was I led by it to despair of success. Only I saw that I must not wholly rely on the catchphrase, upward, not northward, but must rather endeavor to seek a demonstration by setting before the public a clear view of the whole subject, and for this purpose it seemed necessary to resort to writing. So I devoted several months in privacy to the composition of a treatise on the mysteries of three dimensions. Only with the view of evading the law, if possible, I spoke not of a physical dimension, but of a thought land, whence, in theory, a figure could look down upon Flatland and see simultaneously the insides of all things, where it was possible that there might be supposed to exist a figure environed, as it were, with six squares and containing eight terminal points. But in writing this book, I found myself sadly hampered by the impossibility of drawing such diagrams as were necessary for the purpose, for, of course, in our country of Flatland, there are no tablets, but lines, and no diagrams, but lines, all in one straight line, and only distinguishable by difference of size and brightness, so that when I had finished my treatise, which I entitled Through Flatland to Thoughtland, I could not feel certain that many would understand my meaning. Meanwhile, my life was under a cloud. All pleasures palled upon me, all sights tantalized and tempted me to outspoken treason, because I could not but compare what I saw in two dimensions with what it really was if seen in three, and could hardly refrain from making comparisons aloud. I neglected my clients and my own business to give myself to contemplation of the mysteries which I had once beheld, yet which I could impart to no one, and found daily more difficult to reproduce, even before my own mental vision. Well, then one day, About 11 months after my return from Spaceland, I tried to see a cube with my eye closed, but failed. And though I succeeded afterwards, I was not then quite certain, nor have I been ever afterwards, that I had exactly realized the original. This made me more melancholy than before, and determined me to take some step. Yet what, I knew not. I felt that I would have been willing to sacrifice my life for the cause, if thereby I could have produced conviction. But if I could not convince my grandson, how could I convince the highest and most developed circles of the land? And yet, at times, my spirit was too strong for me, and I gave vent to dangerous utterances. Already I was considered heterodox, if not treasonable, and I was keenly alive to the dangers of my position. Nevertheless, I could not, at times, refrain from bursting out into suspicious or half seditious utterances, even among the highest polygonal and circular society. When, for example, the question arose about the treatment of those lunatics who said that they had received the power of seeing the insides of things, I would quote the saying of an ancient circle who declared that prophets and inspired people are always considered by the majority to be mad. And I could not help occasionally dropping such expressions as the eye that discerns the interiors of things and the all-seeing land. Once or twice I even let fall the forbidden terms, the third and fourth dimensions. At last, to complete a series of minor indiscretions at a meeting of our local speculative society held at the palace of the prefect himself, some extremely silly person, having read an elaborate paper exhibiting the precise reasons why Providence has limited the number of dimensions to two and why the attribute of omnipotence is assigned to the Supreme alone, I so far forgot myself as to give an exact account of the whole of my voyage with the sphere into space and through the assembly hall in our metropolis and then to space again, and of my return home, and of everything that I had seen and heard in fact or vision. At first, indeed, I pretended I was describing the imaginary experiences of a fictitious person, but my enthusiasm soon forced me to throw off all disguise, and finally, in a fervent peroration, I exhorted all my hearers to divest themselves of prejudice and to become believers in the third dimension. Need I say that I was at once arrested and taken before the council? Next morning, standing in the very place where but a few months ago the sphere had stood in my company, I was allowed to begin and to continue my narration unquestioned and uninterrupted, but from the first I foresaw my fate. For the president, noting that a guard of the better sort of policeman was in attendance, of angularity little, if at all, under 55 degrees, ordered them to be relieved before I began my defense by an inferior class of 2 degrees or 3 degrees. I knew only too well what that meant. I was to be executed or imprisoned, and my story was to be kept secret from the world by the simultaneous destruction of the officials who had heard it. And this being the case, the president desired to substitute the cheaper for the more expensive victims. Well, after I had concluded my defense, the president, perhaps perceiving that some of the junior circles have been moved by my evident earnestness, asked me two questions. 1. Whether I could indicate the direction, which I meant when I used the words upward, not northward. 2. Whether I could, by any diagrams or descriptions, other than the enumeration of imaginary sides and angles, indicate the figure I was pleased to call a cube. I declared that I could say nothing more, and that I must commit myself to the truth, whose cause would surely prevail in the end. The president replied that he quite concurred in my sentiment and that I could not do better. I must be sentenced to perpetual imprisonment. But if the truth intended that I should emerge from prison and evangelize the world, the truth might be trusted to bring that result to pass. Meanwhile, I should be subjected to no discomfort that was not necessary to preclude escape, and unless I forfeited the privilege by misconduct, I should be occasionally permitted to see my brother, who had preceded me to my prison. 7 years have elapsed, and I am still a prisoner, and if I accept the occasional visits of my brother, debarred from all companionship save that of my jailers. My brother is one of the best of squares, just, sensible, not without fraternal affection, yet I must confess that my weekly interviews, at least in one respect, caused me the bitterest pain. He was present when the sphere manifested himself in the council chamber. He saw the sphere's changing sections. He heard the explanation of the phenomena then given to the circles. Since that time, scarcely a week has passed during 7 whole years without his hearing from me a repetition of the part I played in that manifestation, together with ample descriptions of all the phenomena in Spaceland and the arguments for the existence of solid things derivable from analogy. And yet, I take shame to be forced to confess it, my brother has not yet grasped the nature of the third dimension, and frankly avows his disbelief in the existence of a sphere. Hence I am absolutely destitute of converts. And for aught that I can see, the millennial revelation has been made to me for nothing. Prometheus up in Spaceland was bound for bringing down fire for mortals, but I, poor flatland Prometheus, lie here in prison for bringing down nothing to my countrymen. Yet I exist in the hope that these memoirs, in some manner, I know not how, may find their way to the minds of humanity in some dimension, may stir up a race of rebels who shall refuse to be confined to limited dimensionality. That is the hope of my brighter moments. Alas, it is not always so. Heavily weighs on me at times the burdensome reflection that I cannot honestly say I am confident as to the exact shape of the once-seen, oft-regretted cube, and in my nightly visions the mysterious precept, upward, not northward, haunts me like a soul-devouring sphinx. It is part of the martyrdom which I endure for the cause of the truth, that there are seasons of mental weakness when cubes and spheres flit away into the background of scarce possible existences, when the land of three dimensions seems almost as visionary as the land of one or none, nay, when even this hard wall that bars me from my freedom, these very tablets on which I am writing, and all the substantial realities of flat land itself, appear no better than the offspring of a diseased imagination, or the baseless fabric of a dream. Preface to the second and revised edition, 1884, by the editor. If my poor flatland friend retained the vigor of mind which he enjoyed when he began to compose these memoirs, I should not now need to represent him in this preface, in which he desires fully to return his thanks to his readers and critics in Spaceland, whose appreciation has, with unexpected celerity, required a second edition of this work. Secondly, to apologize for certain errors and misprints, for which, however, he is not entirely responsible, and thirdly, to explain one or two misconceptions. But he is not the square he once was. Years of imprisonment and the still heavier burden of general incredulity and mockery have combined with the thoughts and notions and much also of the terminology which he acquired during his short stay in Spaceland. He has, therefore, requested me to reply in his behalf on two special objections, one of an intellectual, the other of a moral nature. The first objection is that a flatlander, seeing a line, sees something that must be thick to the eye, as well as long
to the eye. Otherwise, it would not be visible if it had not some thickness. And consequently, he ought, it is argued, to acknowledge that his countrymen are not only long and broad, but also, though doubtless to a very slight degree, thick or high. Well, this objection is plausible, and to Spacelanders almost irresistible, so that I must confess, when I first heard it, I knew not what to reply. But my poor old friend's answer appears to me completely to meet it. "I admit," said he, when I had mentioned to him this objection, "I admit the truth of your critic's facts, but I deny his conclusions. It is true that we have really, in Flatland, a third unrecognized dimension, called height, just as it is also true that you have really, in Spaceland, a fourth unrecognized dimension, called by no name at present, but which I will call extra height. But we can no more take cognizance of our height than you can of your extra height. Even I, who have been in Spaceland, and have had the privilege of understanding for 24 hours the meaning of height, even I cannot now comprehend it, nor realize it by the sense of sight or by any process of reason. But I can apprehend it by faith. The reason is obvious. Dimension implies direction, implies measurement, implies the more and the less. Now all our lines are equally and infinitesimally thick, or high, whichever you like. Consequently, there is nothing in them to lead our minds to the conception of that dimension. No delicate micrometer, as has been suggested by one too hasty Spaceland critic, would in the least avail us, for we should not know what to measure, nor in what direction. When we see a line, we see something that is long and bright. Brightness, as well as length, is necessary to the existence of a line, and if the brightness vanishes, the line is extinguished. Hence, all my Flatland friends, when I talk to them about the unrecognized dimension in which is somehow visible in a line, say, "Ah, you mean brightness." And when I reply, "No, I mean a real dimension," they at once retort, "Well, then measure it, or tell us in what direction it extends." And this silences me, for I can do neither. Only yesterday, when the chief circle, in other words our high priest, came to inspect the state prison and paid me his 7th annual visit, and when for the 7th time he put me the question, "Was I any better?" I tried to prove to him that he was high, as well as long and broad, although he did not know it. But what was his reply? "You say I am high. Measure my highness, and I will believe you." What could I do? How could I meet his challenge? I was crushed, and he left the room triumphant. Does this seem strange to you? Well, then put yourself in a similar position. Suppose a person of the fourth dimension, condescending to visit you, were to say, "Whenever you open your eyes, you see a plane, which is of two dimensions, and you infer a solid, which is of three. But in reality you also see, though you do not recognize, a fourth dimension, which is not color, nor brightness, nor anything of the kind, but a true dimension, although I cannot point out to you its direction, nor can you possibly measure it." What would you say to such a visitor? Would not you have him locked up? Well, this is my fate. And it is as natural for us Flatlanders to lock up a square for preaching the third dimension as it is for you Spacelanders to lock up a cube for preaching the fourth. Alas, how strong a family likeness runs through blind and persecuting humanity in all dimensions. Points, lines, squares, cubes, extra cubes, we are all liable to the same errors. All alike the slaves of our respective dimensional prejudices, as one of your Spaceland poets has said, "One touch of nature makes all worlds akin." The author desires me to add that the misconceptions of some of his critics on this matter has induced him to insert in his dialogue with the sphere certain remarks which have a bearing on the point in question, and which he had previously admitted as being tedious and unnecessary. On this point, the defense of the square seems to me to be impregnable. I wish I could say that his answer to the second, or moral, objection was equally clear and cogent. It has been objected that he is a woman-hater. And as this objection has been vehemently urged by those whom nature's decree has constituted the somewhat larger half of the spaceland race, I should like to remove it so far as I can honestly do so, but, well, the square is so unaccustomed to the use of the moral terminology of spaceland that I should be doing him an injustice if I were literally to transcribe his defense against this charge. Acting, therefore, as his interpreter and summarizer, I gather that in the course of an imprisonment of 7 years, he has himself modified his own personal views both as regards women and as regards the isosceles, or lower classes. Personally, he now inclines to the opinion of the sphere that the straight lines are in many important respects superior to the circles. But, writing as a historian, he has identified himself, perhaps too closely, with the views generally adopted by Flatland and, as he has been informed, even by Spaceland historians, in whose pages, until very recent times, the destinies of women and of the masses of mankind have seldom been deemed worthy of mention, and never of careful consideration. In a still more obscure passage, he now desires to disavow the circular or aristocratic tendencies with which some critics have naturally credited him. While doing justice to the intellectual power with which a few circles have for many generations maintained their supremacy over immense multitudes of their countrymen, he believes that the facts of Flatland, speaking for themselves without comment on his part, declare that revolutions cannot always be suppressed by slaughter, and that nature, in sentencing the circles to infecundity, has condemned them to ultimate failure. And herein, he says, I see a fulfillment of the great law of all worlds, that while the wisdom of man thinks it is working one thing, the wisdom of nature constrains it to work another, and quite a different and far better thing. For the rest, he begs his readers not to suppose that every minute detail in the daily life of Flatland must needs correspond to some other detail in Spaceland, and yet he hopes that, taken as a whole, his work may prove suggestive as well as amusing to those Spacelanders of moderate and modest minds who, speaking of that which is of the highest importance but lies beyond experience, decline to say, on the one hand, this can never be, and on the other hand, it must needs be precisely thus, and we know all about it. Thank you for listening to Flatland, A Romance of Many Dimensions, by A. Square, written here in Spaceland by Edwin Abbott Abbott, and read by David Grizzly Smith. Music in these recordings includes Friendly Day from Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. I do hope you'll be kind enough to comment on Podiobooks.com or at GrizzliesGrowls.com. And if you would, please tell others about this book, even if you are an isosceles or a woman. These recordings are released under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 license.